Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with Tom Davis of Grover Beach, California. 40 years ago, you might have caught him flying through Marine Stadium in Long Beach in Shoot the Rapids, his blown fuel hydro racing boat. But nearly 70 years ago now, he was with the 1st Cavalry Division fighting in the Korean War. When we left off, Tom was explaining how he was sent right to the front lines as soon as he arrived overseas.
I went straight to the front lines, and I got there by... Craziest things happen to you. It's a long ways to drive from Seoul to where the front lines was. And we were riding on the stateside truck, in the back of that truck. And it came to an intersection, and they had to stop. And I couldn't figure out when we're on a convoy why we had to stop. Well, there was a guy going across the street in front of us carrying a telephone pole on his back. And he's bent halfway over, and he had to stop for him because we had no choice. But he's carrying this thing on his back, and I could not believe a human being could carry a telephone pole on his back like that. But anyway, we went all the way up to the front lines, and then when I got there, it was dark, and everybody came back off a firefight, and they brought us over there, and they said, okay, there was a guy, pretty good-sized guy next to me, that was brought up in the truck, and he was about 6 foot tall, I think he was. And anyway, they handed him the BAR, and he said, I don't want that damn thing. And he said, well, you're going to have some kind of a weapon up here. And he said, well, I don't want the BAR. And I said, give the BAR to me. And he said, no, you're too small. And I said, no, you don't worry about me and the gun. I said, just give me the BAR. I want the BAR. And he said, turn to the other guy that was taller than I was, and he said, you carry his ammunition then. So he had to end up hoping that I'd be able to shoot the thing and protect his life, because all he had was a pistol.
And am I correct in assuming that the reason he didn't want the BAR is because he figured it would make him a target?
Well, you only have 5 minutes in time in combat to live with a BAR, any automatic weapon. They're the first ones you're going to kill, and so you're the target, and that's all there is to it. So If you take that, and I figured I had plenty of use of a gun when I was hunting all the time, and so I knew how to use a gun, and I figured I could handle that gun with no problem at all. So he didn't want it because he knew he only had, in basic training, they told you only had 5 minutes in combat in automatic weapons. That's the first person you're going to try to knock out. It's pretty tough.
But you heard that too in basic training. So what made you say, yeah, I want that. I want that target on my back.
Well, I didn't care whether there's a target on my back. I wanted the most ammunition I could have because I was a good shot. I shot birds and I shot deer and everything, and I could use it. And I didn't realize it at the time until we got into combat what it meant to be a person that would do what I had to do. The rest of the people knew it, and they'd say, Tom, there's one over here. And I thought, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, why don't you shoot him? But they didn't, because they couldn't shoot a human being. And that was the toughest part about the Army. Not too many people will kill, but they relied on somebody that would. And the only reason I did, because I thought they were animals. And I had no intentions of killing a human being. I just was shooting animals, because I'd shot them before. And so that, to me, it was just, they're animals, and so I had no problem shooting them. It was tough. I didn't realize it at first, but I did afterwards, because when I wounded one guy, he was laying on the ground. That was one evening that I'll never forget, because the lieutenant, I called for flares to be dropped from an airplane so we could see the enemy, and the lieutenant says, we haven't got any information yet that he's the enemy's here. And my first sergeant, he said, he's not going to send the airplane up with flares. And I said, tell him to go to hell. He said, you tell him to go to hell. And he said, I said, no, you're running his interference. You're my boss. And so anyway, they did finally send the planes up. And the next morning, one of the guys that I shot was still alive. So I said, I grabbed the lieutenant and I said, I want to show you what a dead one looks like. I thought he was still dead. I said, well, hell, he's still alive. And I said, he's trying to throw a hand grenade at you. And he said, shoot him. And I said, no, he's not going to hurt anybody. I said, he can't even have him raise his arm hardly. I said, he's down for the count now. I said, if we don't take care of him, we'll shoot him. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. You do it if you want to shoot him. But I refused to shoot the guy. That's the first time I realized he was a human being. As far as I was concerned, they were all animals at first, and I didn't have any problem shooting them, you know. But when I saw he was a human being that I'd shot and he was still alive, I wasn't going to shoot him again.
So then you took him prisoner or what?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what ever happened to him, you know. I hope that they did, you know, because we moved on from that position to where I ended up being in another firefight. So I don't know what happened to him, you know. When I left that position, we'd go on patrols looking for the enemy constantly. We'd be maybe in your your bunker for 2 or 3 days, and then we'd go out for a day and a half out in the woods looking for the enemy. And if we didn't find him, we came back, you know. But somebody else would be taking over my bunker while I was gone. It was kind of a rough deal. It was not fun at all.
And how old were you when you got over there?
You know, I was 20. I think I turned 21 when I was over there. Anyway, I know I had a birthday over there because it was September the wounded in October, so I had to be go past my birthday. I don't remember celebrating it. Yeah. It was just a day that went by.
And I want to hear about when you got wounded, but I'm also interested, were there some close calls that you had before that? That maybe put that thought in your mind, hey, I'm in a pretty dangerous position out here.
One firefight that I was running the BAR, and I kept worrying about running out of ammunition, because if the lieutenant wouldn't send the airplanes up there, wouldn't drop the flares, because he didn't think there was any enemy out there, how was I going to get enough ammunition to stay through the night, you know? And fortunately, I did, but only had what I had on me. And once that ran out, then I was a dead person myself. I mean, if the enemy knows that gun stopped shooting, there's got to be something wrong. You know, he's either out of ammunition or he's dead, one of the two, you know. So I told the guys, I said, as soon as that flare goes out, because there's two of us in the bunker besides myself, and I said, as soon as that flare goes out, I says, we're getting the hell out of here. And he said, what do you mean you're getting out? I said, you don't think they know where we are? I said, I've been telling them where we are for quite some time now. You know, that he's got tracer bullets going out of this gun. Every fifth one has got a tracer bullet, and it's like an arrow pointing right to me. Yeah. I said, so really, they know exactly where I'm at. And so we stay here, we're dead ducks. And so they followed me, and we went back into a different location, and they didn't know where we were then. And so when it came daylight, they left. And as soon as the sun started to come up at all, the enemy leaves. They blew their whistles, and they blow all their crazy noises, because they don't all speak the same language, I guess, because they blew whistles and made some contacts, and letting everybody know that they need to get out, you know, and they left. I mean, it was just as quiet as a mouse. As soon as they started to leave, it was just quiet. And then the people don't realize what you're fighting in. You're fighting in brush that's 5 feet high or higher, and it's just thousands of brush, and it's only just trails through there. And these guys come out of that brush just like animals coming out. And I just thought they were animals, you know, so I didn't have a problem shooting them, because they look like deer, because they're all wearing brown clothes. And at night, they look like animals as far as I was concerned. So I didn't have a problem shooting them. Most guys didn't understand that problem of me, because I wasn't out there trying to kill some innocent person. It was tough. But I didn't think too much about it until I came back and was in the hospital and everything else. Then I thought about it, you know, and I said, "Nam, they don't like to kill people." And I don't think that's a nice thing to be saying I did, you know. But on the other hand, it was either me or them, and so I didn't have a choice.
All right. Well, tell me about October 5th, 1950. How did that day begin, and how did it end for you?
We got up in the morning. They said, we're going to move out. And I said, where are we going? They said, well, we're going to go over here to another location and take over the hill. And I said, oh. And so we went out on a long march and start marching, and we got to the top of the hill and started to go down the other side, and we're in single file, and the very last guy in the group, there was probably 200 of us, 200 at least hit the hill originally, but I don't know where the other 100 came from, because it seems to me that it was about 100 in our group. And the last guy on the hill was shot. And he went down. So I said, we're in enemy territory. We got down to the bottom of the hill. There's river down there, and it wasn't much of a river, and I don't know whether it was a big river or not at one time. It wasn't much water in it. We could walk across it, I'd say maybe 2 feet deep at the most. And I got out in the middle of it, and I heard an explosion. I looked down to my right, and there was a bomb that went off in the water. It came from them. They shot, it wasn't a mortar. It was very similar to a mortar, does the same thing, except it shows you where it lands. In other words, it was a flare type of thing. It went up in the air, and then went at that end of the, about, I'd say, 200 feet from us, and another one went off above it, and they both hit in the water, in the river. And I said, "Do you see that?" And the guy said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Do you see those two hit?" And he said, "No, I didn't pay any attention to it." And I said, "Well, that just told you they had it zeroed in, because this got this river zeroed in." I said, "So if we try to come back out of there, they're going to get us." I said, "You got to remember that." And so I forgot about it, you know, because when you get in a firefight, you don't remember a lot of things. But when I did get back, I found out I almost got to that river when I got hit with a mortar, and it blew me up into a tree, and I had a broken leg and shrapnel in my back and shrapnel in my both arms, and my thigh was almost shot off, and I was laying on the ground, and I was going to heaven.
So as you experienced it, what were you doing when you got hit? What were the moments right before you got hit like?
Well, what happens, we took the hill away from the enemy, as we did, we took over their entire hill there, and we went up to the top of it and got to the, ran them off, and then they had bunkers all around there, and so I climbed into one of the bunkers, and I remembered all the stories when I was in training. Do not pick up any enemy's ammunition, period, because it might be booby-trapped. And so it was full of ammunition on the ground there on where I was in. And I said, "I'm not touching it." So I was in there, and all of a sudden I looked up, and the guy running by me says, "Get the hell out of here, Tom." And I said, "Okay, we're going home, go getting out." So I took off, and I was running down the hill, and I must have got hit at that point almost halfway. I was almost down at the bottom when a mortar hit me and blew me up into the tree. And it's actually, when I say a tree, it was probably a good sized brush, you know, that was just hung up in that thing. When I came, I was going to heaven, on my way to heaven, and I could see myself going to the pearly gates and everything else, but they didn't open them for me and sent me back. And so I came to, and I said, "Oh my God, I'm alive." So I yanked and pulled my leg out and crawled off the hill. And there was 200 of us when we went on that hill, and there was only one person down left. So I'm thinking that when I crawled off the hill, I come around the corner, and the guy said, "Oh, my God, Tom, we left you for dead." And I said, "Well, I'm not dead." And he said, and I grabbed a hold of him, and he helped me. And there was one tank. We had was six tanks when we first went into attack. And there were six tanks that were out there shooting overhead fire while we were taking the hill over. And there was only one tank left, and they said they saw us. He was trying to carry me, and they sent five more guys out with a litter, put me on that, and put me on top of the tank, and drove me back to a safe zone where they started to take my clothes all off, slowly cut them off, and find out where the wounds are, and start to take care of me there. And I told them, I said, "Don't cut them off." I said, "Give them to somebody else. It's too damn cold here." I said, "I had two pairs of pants on." They said, "Well, Tom, they're all shot to hell anyway, so I wouldn't worry about where they go." He said, "So we're just going to cut them off." But I didn't know that at the time. I couldn't figure out why I wasn't bleeding. And the guy says, "You would have bled to death if it had been warmer." And it was so cold that that's the only reason I didn't bleed to death. The blood wasn't circulating. It was so cold. And so I was lucky that way, but it didn't take long that when I was in, they put me in on a truck and took me over to a tent hospital, and put me in a tent hospital. And I looked down and I thought, "My God, I hope he had a good dinner." Looked like he took the whole thigh out on one side, and it was pretty badly torn up. My back was pretty sore, and I didn't know how bad it was, but it was wounded in the back too, and both arms and hand. I started seeing little pieces of me. That was stripped nude. They had me stripped nude in this hospital room there, and I could see all these bloody places all over me. It was kind of crazy looking. But I said, give me some more morphine. And they gave me a little bit more. They said, you've had plenty, so don't worry about it. But anyway, I was a lot of pain by now. And it was, the pain started coming on. I didn't have any pain at the beginning of it, but it was so cold, I guess. That's Mother Nature takes care of you when that takes place.
Well, and I have some more questions about that, which we're going to get to when we come back with Tom Davis of Grover Beach, California. Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.